Good evening. I'm William Cooper, and you're listening to the Hour of the Time. We're going to go straight to Phoenix right now for a metal report from Gene Miller. Good evening, Gene.
Good evening. How are you tonight?
Pretty good. I just wanted to ask you right off the bat up front, is there any truth to the rumor that Kurt Saxon is spreading that we're going to give this hour to him?
Not that I know of.
Not that I know of either. You know, I helped get him on the air because I figured if the sheeple are going to be deceived, they might as well be deceived by somebody who's going to teach them how to store food and protect themselves. How about a metal report there?
Okie doke. Gold today, we had a high of 381.90, a low of 377.90, to close at 381.30, down 30 cents for the day. Silver had a high of $5.15. A low of $5 and a close at $5.12, up 4 cents for the day. Platinum had a low high of $380.30, a low of $376.50, to close at $380.10, up $1.80. And the Dow Jones had a high of $39.34.40, a low of $39.02.60, to close at $39.12.70, down $1.70. One of the questions that gets asked to me frequently is, where do I think gold's going? How do we track it? How do we have an idea? Well, I was studying with a friend today. One of the methods is called a candlestick method. And actually, not to sound like some guru or anything, but it came from an ancient Chinese method of trading when they would trade rice back and forth. And what they would do is they would take the open and the close on a metal such as gold, and that would comprises the body of the candle. And depending on which direction it went, if it went up, the candlestick was white. If it went down in price, in other words, if the close was lower than the open, the candlestick was black. The movement, the high-low movement, it comprises the shadow of which the candle stick emits, and it gives us a direction as to what's happening in the market. Today, there was a real small high opening and close, like a 60-cent margin or a 30-cent margin there, and what it did, what they call is a hammer, and it was called hammering out the bottom. And what it tells us today, in technical terms, is that when it hammers out the bottom, it means that we're basically at the bottom of this recent pullback. If you remember last week, we were in the 390 range. We pulled back down to the 395 range. We pulled back down to about the 380 range, which was normal. We had about 80% bullish consensus, and so there's going to be a sell-off, and it's just stair-stepping its way up. And we're basically at the bottom of this current pullback. So is it a good time to buy? Yes. It's as cheap as it's going to be probably here in the next few days. A couple other things. Question about retirement accounts. When we did the program last week, I basically ran out of time. The hour went a lot quicker than I thought it was going to go. There is a way, and as far as retirement accounts, because there's many people, in fact, most people have some sort of IRAs. Some people have what they call SEPs, self-employed pension plans. Both of those are qualified that you can take them out of cash, out of Federal Reserve notes that are rapidly losing their value, and you can put them into gold. You can put them into gold bullion. You can put them into non-confiscatable numismatic coins. There's a number of different directions you can go. Some of this stuff is just new, recently available to the public, and so you might want to call and ask us for some information regarding what can you do with your IRAs or what can you do with your retirement accounts. How can you protect yourself? How can you get out of the government having total control of your money?
Well, that's illuminating.
Yeah. As far as the numismatic coins, they're doing very well yet. Those that are into the Morgans and the Peace Dollars, they're doing extremely well. We have a very limited number of those available, but those that may be interested, and they're continuing to go up. I do have a special that I'm going to run here. In fact, you may want to write our number down real quick here. It's 1-800-289-2646. Number one, call us and get our new updated newsletter and our information that we have out for the 1994. It's all free and free to you, and it'll give you a good education as far as what's going on in the market. Tonight, the phone lines will be open for about 15 minutes. Normally at this time, the phone lines are closed and you just get an answering machine. But I got three bags of junk silver. I mean, this is excellent stuff as far as protection. And what is junk silver? Junk silver, if you remember last week, are coins that were minted between before 1964, and they're 90% silver. They're U.S. minted coins. They're very easily spendable, extremely liquid, and very much a protectionary type thing. I have three bags that I got in today, and normally we take whatever it costs plus 5% commission on top of it. These three bags, and these three bags only, we're going to get rid of them at a 3% commission, which saves you about $75. If you call within the next 15 minutes, I'll be here. There's somebody at the front desk to answer the phone. It's 1-800-289-2646. The price on a junk bag, just so you know, there's 715 ounces of junk of silver in a junk bag of silver. The price on these is $3,872.13. Like I said, it's about a $75 savings over the normal cost, and I have three available. So for the first three people that call me and give me their name and their number and their address and say they want them, they're yours at that savings. So that's my special for the week. And I think that's about all I have to say. How's everything going on your end, Bill?
Well, I'm getting well, and Carolyn's sick. My voice is still not too good. My throat is still sore, but I feel a lot better. Carolyn is flat on her back now, and that's why she wasn't introduced at the beginning of the show.
Uh-huh.
So if you all want to send her a get-well card or something, I'm sure she would appreciate that.
Yeah.
I want to thank you, Gene, once again for giving us the scoop on what's happening in the market. And we'll talk to you later tonight on the second hour.
Yeah, okay. Thank you. Give us a call.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Well, for those of you who have not been listening or just tuned in or maybe started listening last Thursday and are not catching the later shows, you had either better catch the later shows or send for the tapes or have a radio that has a tape recorder in it so that you can record these broadcasts if you're sleeping. And if you don't know how to do that, folks, if you've got a radio that you can program to come on and stay on for 1 hour, all you need is a quiet room, put that radio in there, program it to come on at whatever hour that you want to tape, and put a voice-activated tape recorder right beside it. So if you don't have a tape recorder in your radio, that's the way to do it. The voice tape recorder, if you put it on record, not pause now, you have to put it on record, and then leave the room, make sure it's a quiet room, the recorder will not record. But when the radio comes on and noise starts coming out of that speaker, it will activate the voice activation in the tape recorder, and it will record the entire hour. So that's just one way you can do it, and that suggestion was sent in by one of our listeners who did not have a tape recorder in his shortwave radio. If you have the funds and would like to buy a super, super shortwave radio, Sangian sells a top-line model with a tape recorder built right into it, and it's programmable. And also, you can get the exact same radio from Radio Shack, only the name is different. It's the Realistic DX392. The Realistic DX392 from Radio Shack. After I get through with this series on all of these documents, we'll probably do a show on just shortwave radio listening. Right now, I don't have time. I got to get all this stuff out to you folks. Tonight, I'm going to cover a lot of things. I'm going to start off with the second annual report to Congress, January 1st, 1962, December the 31st, 1962. It's the second annual report to Congress from the United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency. It's United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, Publication 14, released February 1963. So pay attention, folks. You need to know all of this. And, okay, I'm going to read from page 10 of this report. The United States plan also provides for the reduction of forces of the United States and the Soviet Union to 2.1 million in stage 1 and 1.05 million in stage 2, with corresponding reductions by other nations. Stage 1 of the U.S. plan contains essential measures to meet the nuclear threat, especially by a cutoff of the production of fissionable materials for nuclear weapons purposes. Further measures to reduce and eventually eliminate nuclear weapons remaining in national arsenals would be carried out in stages 2 and 3 of the United States program after the completion of international expert studies. The United States proposes completion of stages 1 and 2 and 3 years each and stage 3 as soon as possible. Now, they never did stick to their 3 years. It took them a lot longer than that for both stages 1. We are in stage 2 right now. According to the timetable, we have one more year in stage 2, and then it goes to stage 3. Now, remember, these are actual documents, folks, that you can look up yourself. I've been reading directly from actual United States government documents since the early show last Thursday. This is the fifth hour of broadcast of these documents, which reveal that our government, the one that calls itself our government, is in fact illegal, unlawful, unconstitutional, treasonous, and is destroying this nation from within to bring about a one-world totalitarian socialist government under the United Nations. It is not conjecture. It is not Looney Tunes. It's not prophecy, as Mr. Kurt Saxon deems it. It is fact, and it's coming to you right out of these documents that prove it beyond any shadow of any doubt. And by the way, folks, if you see a black helicopter flying in your area, don't report it to us, because according to Kurt Saxon, it's only a UFO. I'll tell you, I never laughed so hard in my life as I did during the last hour listening to Kurt Saxon. But I helped him get on radio because he does teach you how to store food, teaches you how to defend yourself, and a few other things. But, folks, you better be listening with the right ear when you listen to that man and all these other people, too. He was, in fact, one of the first founding members of the Satanic Church in America. He was, in fact, as he said, kicked out of the John Birch Society because he was subversive. Ladies and gentlemen, that man is not on our side. According to his own broadcast, as soon as they get rid of all the people who should never have been born, then this is going to be a better world. Instead of calling in and asking the questions that you do, why don't you call in and ask him who those people are? Who's he talking about? You might find out that you're on his list. Then again, you might find out it's somebody else. Might be all the black people, or all the red people, or all the Chinese people. I guarantee it's somebody that doesn't look like him. I guarantee you that. I continue. Ladies and gentlemen, provision is also made for appropriate inspection and verification at all stages. Adequate assurance must be provided not only as to arms destroyed, but also as to permitted levels of retained arms. It is not anticipated that verification would have to be excessive to be effective, but its intensity would be commensurate with the specific disarmament measure under consideration. The United States has suggested a progressive zonal system of inspection as a possible way of assuring observance of the treaty. Now, if you recently purchased a box of kicks and looked on the back of it, you saw the regions that the United States has been divided up into. They are teaching the children. Of course, most parents don't pay any attention to what's on a cereal box, nor what children watch on television, nor what children watch in their movies and videos. So, of course, most of you parents don't even know that. The United States plan further proposes the establishment of an international disarmament organization within the United Nations framework. It also contains specific provisions for a prohibition against placing weapons of mass destruction in outer space, the institution of measures aiming at reducing the risk of war which could be initiated prior to the conclusion of an overall disarmament treaty, and the strengthening of peacekeeping arrangements through improved procedures for peaceful settlements of disputes, and the eventual establishment of an international peace force. Now, I'm sure even the most stupid listener out there can understand that if the United Nations has a peacekeeping force, then the United Nations is the boss, and that the United States has no sovereignty, and in fact will be subject to the United Nations. The truth is, folks, it happened years ago. The United Nations and the United States of America are one and the same. The United Nations and the Soviet Union are one and the same. Make you angry? Good. I hope you have a fit of apoplexy. I hope it makes you run out and get these documents so that you can confirm it for yourself instead of sitting there and fuming and blustering. A lot of Archie Bunkers in this world, folks. Don't confuse me with the facts. I already know what I believe. Isn't that right? Okay, here we go. In contrast, the Soviet plan places emphasis on reducing selected categories of armaments in each of its three stages. See, their plan has three stages also. Accordingly, the Soviet draft treaty initially sought a 100% reduction in nuclear delivery vehicles in Stage 1, although the nuclear weapons themselves would not be eliminated until Stage 2. The Soviet plan was more restrictive than ours, ladies and gentlemen. They wanted to come to one world government first, because in the entire history of the socialist movement, their goal has never been hidden, and it's always been one world government. A democratic socialist state. Democracy and socialism are the same word with the same meanings, as you will find out as you continue to listen to the hour of the time. I'm going to skip over to page 11, I believe it is. However, the overall Soviet approach remains substantially the same as the United States plan, and that even in the light of this shift, it is inadequate in terms of preserving the existing relative military balance. This remains a subject for further exploration. The Soviet Union later agreed, however, to a percentage reduction of conventional armaments, coupled with the almost complete elimination of delivery means in Stage 1. It also insists on the abolition of all foreign military bases and the withdrawal of all foreign troops from abroad. On the matter of force levels, the Soviet Union originally proposed Stage 1 levels of 1.7 million for the United States and the Soviet Union, and Stage 2 levels of 1 million, although later expressing a willingness to accept a level of 1.9 million for Stage 1. The Soviet position on verification calls only for arrangements to verify the destruction of agreed numbers of armaments. It makes no provision for a check of remaining levels to determine, for example, whether weapons have been secretly hidden. According to the initial Soviet plan, all three stages were to occur over a four-year period, with Stage 1 being carried out in 21 months. The overall time period was subsequently extended to 5 years, with Stage 1 extended to 2 years. Although the Soviet plan also advocates reliance upon a strengthened United Nations to maintain peace. You see, folks? This is back, way back there, ladies and gentlemen. This was written, remember, 1963. One year after the documents that I read to you last Friday. A key task involved backstopping the United States delegation to the 18-nation disarmament committee meetings in Geneva beginning in March 1962, including detail of secretariat personnel to the United States delegation, secretariat, communications and documentation to and from Geneva, and liaison with the Department of State's Office of International Conferences on Administrative and Personnel Arrangements for the delegation. Under reference research staff, on page 45, another prominent activity of this staff arises from Executive Order Number 11044 on interagency coordination of arms control and disarmament matters. See Appendix 1. Under this order, the director of ACDA is responsible for planning and developing a program of government research and studies on arms control and disarmament policy. The order enjoins him to maintain a continuing inventory of government research activities and to submit to parties to the treaty and other transition requirements have been satisfied. And from that point on, it is a carbon copy of the blueprint for the peace race presented to the United Nations by President John Fitzgerald Kennedy. Nothing was changed. And I remind you that under stage 2, paragraph 2, subparagraph 8, specified types of small arms, declarations by types, which is happening right now, and specified categories of ammunition for armaments listed in stage 1, section A, subparagraph 1B, and subparagraph B above would be reduced to levels consistent with the levels of armaments agreed for the end of stage 2. They're not talking, ladies and gentlemen, about military armaments there. Go to page 82, general provisions applicable to all stages. And under paragraph 2 in the interim agreement, it talks about a preparatory commission. And paragraph 3, subparagraph C, the treaty would come into force when it had been ratified by blank number of states which had not been agreed upon at this time, including the United States of America, the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, and an agreed number of the following states. Again, that's left blank because it had not been agreed upon at that particular point. D, in order to assure the achievement of the fundamental purpose of a permanent state of general and complete disarmament in a peaceful world, the treaty would specify that the accession of certain military significant sites would be essential for the continued effectiveness of the treaty or for the coming into force of particular measures or stages. Notice, folks, how they keep referring to disarmament in a peaceful world. There has been no peaceful world in the history of the world. The world is not at peace now, and we continue to disarm. E, the parties of the treaty would undertake to exert every effort to induce other states or authorities to accede to the treaty. F, the treaty would be subject to ratification or acceptance in accordance with constitutional processes. Now, folks, remember, they're talking about all the nations of the world, most of whom don't have a constitutional process. Thereby, when they say constitutional process, that's meant to fool Americans into thinking it's going to be done by our constitution. It's not true. It will be done according to the United Nations Charter, the United Nations Treaty, and the resolutions passed by the General Assembly of the United Nations. And none of it is a constitutional process. G, a depository government would be agreed upon which would have all of the duties normally incumbent upon a depository. Alternatively, the United Nations would be the depository. Now listen to that carefully, folks. I'm going to read it to you again. Here they say that the United Nations will be the depository government of the world, which will oversee and have all of the duties normally incumbent upon such a government. I'm going to read it to you again. G. A depository government would be agreed upon which would have all of the duties normally incumbent upon a depository. Alternatively, the United Nations would be the depository. Welcome to the real world, sheeple. It's about time you left the theme park and came out into the real world. The gates are closing. Your e-ticket is no good anymore. So even if the rides kept going around, they're not going to take your ticket. I now have here Public Law 101-216. Public Law 101-216 from the United States Code, Congressional and Administrative News, Volume 2, R347, 1989, V.2, whatever that means. Public Law 101-216. It was H.R., our House Resolution 1495, December the 11th, 1989. So if you're sitting there thinking, Cooper's reading all this old stuff that they never implemented and he's trying to scare us, listen to this, sheeple. Listen to this, Archie Bunker. Listen to this, all you good people who have already awakened and just need the ammunition to be able to fight. I'm giving it to you now. Public Law 101-216, which was H.R. 1495, December the 11th, 1989. Arms Control and Disarmament Amendments Act of 1989. So this isn't a new act, ladies and gentlemen. These are disarmament amendments of the original law that I've been reading to you. For legislative history of the Act, see page 1292, and on that page it recounts everything that you've heard from me since Thursday. So I'm going to go directly to these amendments. An act to amend the Arms Control and Disarmament Act to authorize appropriations for the Arms Control and Disarmament Agency and for other purposes. Being enacted by the Senate and House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled. Section 1, short title. This act may be cited as the Arms Control and Disarmament Amendments Act of 1989. Title 1, Arms Control and Disarmament Agency. Section 101, Authorization of Appropriations for Fiscal Year 1988. Section 49A of the Arms Control and Disarmament Act is amended to read as follows. Section 49A. To carry out the purposes of this act, there are authorized to be appropriated A, $36 million for the fiscal year 1990 and $37,316,000 for the fiscal year 1991, and B, and this is the key, such additional amounts as may be necessary for fiscal years 1990 and 1991 for increases in salary, pay, retirement, other employee benefits authorized by law, and other, quote, non-discretionary costs, unquote, and to offset adverse fluctuations in foreign currency exchange rates. How do you like that? And these monies are not disclosed. Section 102, duties of the Deputy Director. Go down to Section 103, duties of the Special Representatives. A, in general, Section 27 of the Arms Control and Disarmament Act, 22 United States Code, 2567, is amended by striking out, quote, who shall perform, unquote, and all that follows through the period and inserting in lieu thereof the following, quote, one of whom should serve as special representative for conventional arms control negotiations, and the other should serve as special representative and chief science advisor to the director. The two special representatives shall perform their duties and exercise their powers under the direction of the president and the secretary of state, acting through the director. Now we go over to, excuse me, folks. We go over to Public Law 101-216, Laws of the 101st Congress, First Session, December the 11th, and I quote verbatim. The Director of the United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency should study and report to the Congress on the advisability of establishing in the agency an Arms Control Implementation and Compliance Resolution Bureau or other organizational unit that would be responsible for, number one, managing the implementation of existing and future arms control agreements. Two, coordinating the activities of the Special Verification Commission and the Standing Consultative Commission. And three, preparing comprehensive analysis and policy positions regarding the effective resolution of arms control compliance questions. Section 105, Arms Control Verification. Establishment of working group. The president should establish a working group, one, to examine verification approaches to a strategic arms reduction agreement and other arms control agreements, and two, to assess the relevance of such agreements of the verification provisions of the treaty between the United States and the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics on the, quote, elimination of their intermediate range and short range missiles, signed at Washington, December 8, 1987, unquote. Go down to B, subparagraph B, proposed, prospective, and potential bilateral or multilateral arms treaties in the areas of nuclear, conventional, chemical, and space weapons. Two, the agency shall seek to improve United States verification and monitoring activities through the monitoring and support of relevant research and analysis. And three, the agency shall provide detailed information on the activities pursuant to this section in its annual report to the Congress. Don't go away, folks. I'll be right back after this very short break. Hope you have a pad of paper and pen with you, folks, because we're going to continue. And I go down to section 107, reporting requirement on prospects for conversion of United States defense industries. Now, did you hear me, ladies and gentlemen? Section 107, reporting requirement on prospects for conversion of United States defense industries. The director of the United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency, in consultation with the Secretary of Defense and the Secretary of Commerce, shall study, and not later than 180 days after the date of enactment of this act, submit to the Congress a report on concrete steps which could be taken to improve prospects for conversion of United States defense industries to non-defense related activities as opportunities are presented through the achievement of successful arms control agreements. Title II, on-site inspection activities. And this will verify a lot. The Arms Control and Disarmament Act is amended by adding at the end the following. Title V, on-site inspection activities. Section 61, findings. The Congress finds that, 1. Under this Act, the United States Arms Control and Disarmament Agency is charged with the formulation and implementation of United States Arms Control and Disarmament Policy in a manner which will promote the national security. That, folks, is a laugh. Number 2. As defined in this Act, the terms arms control and disarmament mean, quote, the identification, verification, inspection, limitation, control, reduction, and elimination of armed forces and armaments of all kinds under international agreement to establish an effective system of international control. International control. International control. International control. 3. The On-Site Inspection Agency was established in 1988 pursuant to the INF Treaty to implement on behalf of the United States the inspection provisions of the INF Treaty. 4. On-site inspection activities under the INF Treaty include Subsection A. Inspections in the Soviet Union, Czechoslovakia, and the German Democratic Republic. B. Escort duties for Soviet teams visiting the United States and the basing countries. C. Establishment and operation of the portal monitoring facility in the Soviet Union. And D. Listen to this very carefully, sheeple. support for the Soviet inspectors at the portal monitoring facility in Utah. Support for the Soviet inspectors at the portal monitoring facility in Utah. 5. The personnel of the on-site inspection agency includes civilian technical experts, civilian support personnel, and members of the armed forces. And I go now to Public Law 101-216 to Section 63, Authorizations of Appropriations for On-Site Inspection Agency. They are authorized to be appropriated $49,830,000 for fiscal year 1990 and $48,831,000 for fiscal year 1991 for the expenses of the On-Site Inspection Agency in carrying out on-site inspection activities pursuant to the INF Treaty. Section 64 definitions as used in this title. The term INF Treaty means the treaty between the United States and the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics on the elimination of their intermediate range and shorter range missiles signed at Washington December 8, 1987. And 2, the term OSIA means the on-site inspection agency established by the president or such other agency as may be designated by the president to carry out the on-site inspection provisions of the INF Treaty approved December the 11th, 1989. Act cited by popular name. This is from the United States Code 1988, Supplement 3, Popular Names. Index. Arms Control and Disarmament Act. Public Law 101-216. Title 1, Subsection 101-103A. 106, Title 2, Subsection 201, December 11, 1989. 103 Statutes at Large, 1853 to 1855. Public Law 102-228. Title 4, Subsection 401A, B, 402, December 12, 1991, 105 statutes at large, 1698 and 1699. The Arms Control Disarmament Act, Public Law 87-297, September 26, 1961, 75 statutes at law, 631, Title 22, Subsection 2551, et sequitur. Public Law 88-186, November 26, 1963, 77 statutes at large, 3441. Public Law 88-426, Title 3, Subsection 305, 17, August 14, 1964, 78 statutes at large, 424. Public Law 88-448, Title 4, Subsection 401D, August 19, 1964, 78 statutes at large, 490. Public Law 89-27, May 27, 1965, 79 statutes at large, 118. Public Law 90-314, May 23, 1968, 82 statutes at large, 129. Public Law 91-246, May 12, 1970, 84 statutes at large, 207. Public Law 92-352, Title 3, Subsection 301, July 13, 1972, 86 statutes at large, 494. Public Law 94-141, Title 1, Subsection 141, 144 through 149, November 29, 1975, 89 statutes at large, 757-760. Public Law 95-108, Subsection 2, Paragraph A, 3-6, August 17, 1977, 91 statutes at large, 871 through 873. Public Law 95-338, subsection 1-3, August 8, 1978, 92 statutes at large, 458 and 459. Public Law 96-66, subsection 1-2, Paragraph A, September 21st, 1979, 93 statutes at large, 414. Public Law 96-465, Title 2, Subsection 2204, October 17, 1980, 94 Statutes at Large, 2159. Public Law 97-339, Subsection 2, A, 3, and 4, October 15, 1982, 96 Statutes at Large, 1635 and 1636. Public Law 98-202, Subsection 1 through 6, A, December 2, 1983, 97 Statutes at Large, 1381 and 1382. Public Law 99-93, Title 7, Subsection 701-703, August 16, 1985, 99 Statutes at Large, 444 and 445. Public Law 99-550, Section 2, C, October 27, 1986, 100 Statutes at Large, 3070. Public Law 100-213, Subsection 2 and 3B and 4 and 6A, December 24, 1987, 101 Statutes at Large, 1444 through 1446. In there you will find that they took out, ladies and gentlemen, the portion which stated that no section of this treaty would be considered a requirement to disarm the American people. It is no longer in there. And they are, in fact, doing it. You cannot have a treaty that specifies complete and total disarmament if somebody's going to be still keeping their arms. It's gone. It's not there. Now I go to the Congressional Record of the House of Representatives, October 12, 1989, H7007. Listen carefully. The chairman. Are there further amendments to the amendment in the nature of a substitute? If not, the question is on the amendment in the nature of a substitute offered by the gentleman from Florida, Mr. Faschel, as amended. The amendment in the nature of a substitute as amended was agreed to. The chairman. Under the rule, the committee rises. Accordingly, the committee rose, and the speaker pro temp, Mr. Neal of Massachusetts, having assumed the chair, Mr. Coleman of Texas, chairman of the committee of the whole House of the State of the Union, reported that the committee, having had under consideration the bill, H.R. 1495, to amend the Arms Control and Disarmament Act to authorize appropriations for the Arms Control and Disarmament Agency and for other purposes pursuant to House Resolution 255. He reported the bill back to the committee of the whole. The speaker pro temp under the rule, the previous question is ordered. The question is on the amendment. The amendment was agreed to. The speaker pro temp, the question is on the engrossment and third reading of the bill. The bill was ordered to be engrossed and read a third time and was read the third time. The speaker pro temp, the question is on the passage of the bill. The question was taken and the speaker pro temp announced that the ayes appeared to have it. Mr. Broomfield, Mr. Speaker, I object to the vote on the ground that a quorum is not present and make the point of order that a quorum is not present. The speaker pro temp, evidently a quorum is not present. The sergeant at arms will notify absent members. The vote was taken by electronic device, and there were yeas 400, nays 11, not voting 21. All the names of who voted on this bill in the original disarmament and control act is in this documentation of papers also. And now I go to the Congressional Record of the Senate. The Senate, November 17th, 1989. Mr. Pell, Mr. President, I strongly commend to the Senate this measure now before this body, the Arms Control and Disarmament Amendments Act of 1989. The amendment being offered today contains the mutually acceptable provisions of both the House Bill, H.R. 1495, and an original bill, Senate 1868, reported on November 9th by the Committee on Foreign Relations. And it goes through all this gobbledygook until we get to what's important here. And it talks about the committee is concerned about the sharp reduction of resources devoted to research on verification issues and wishes to make certain that verification and compliance are accorded the attention which will be necessary in the years ahead as intensive and complex verification proposals are agreed upon and implemented accordingly. The armament of the amendment incorporates a House provision urging the president to establish a working group to examine various verification approaches to strategic arms reduction and other possible agreements, and to assess the relevance for such agreement of the verification provision of the International Nuclear Forces Treaty. Moreover, the amendment contains a provision proposed by the Senator from Massachusetts, Mr. Kerry, calling upon the agency to allocate sufficient resources to develop and maintain a comprehensive information and database on verification concepts, research, technologies, and systems. And we go down. The amendment also incorporates provisions on on-site inspection activities, and the appropriation authorized is $49,830,000 for fiscal year 1990 and $48,831,000 for fiscal year 1991 for the expenses of the on-site inspection agency in carrying out on-site inspection activities pursuant to the INF Treaty. Finally, this committee bill includes a provision completely acceptable to both sides offered by the Senator from Illinois, Mr. Simon, which calls upon the director of the agency to report to the Congress within 180 days on concrete steps which could be taken to improve prospects for conversion of significant portions of United States defense industries to non-defense related activities as opportunities are presented through the achievement of successful arms control agreements. Excuse me, folks, I gotta take a little drink here. Mr. President, I believe that this amendment provides a reasonable and practical level of authorization. It will ensure that the agency is able to perform its expanding duties in a manner that will bring credit to the United States. Other provisions in this legislation will help ensure that ACDA focuses on the areas of greatest need and will do so with improved management and structure. Mr. Helms. Mr. President, I have a few points to make about the fiscal year 1990 authorization bill for the Arms Agency, but before I make these points, I congratulate my distinguished colleague, the chairman, Senator Pell, for his diligence and leadership in the Foreign Relations Committee's work on this important bill. Senator Pell and I, together with our professional staffs, have cooperated on a spirit of friendship and comity on this bill. That's Jesse Helms and Senator Pell, Claiborne Pell. Mr. President, I would make 3 points at the outset. Number one, in my priority, for the first time, the bill assigns specific duties to improve security at ACDA to the Deputy Director of ACDA. The ACDA Deputy Director is now assigned specific responsibility for managing the important areas of security and administration. This provision was put in the bill in order to correct the serious security problems that were discovered during the 1983-87 period at ACDA headquarters and at the Geneva negotiations. These security problems were so serious that they required new management at ACDA and direct attention at the highest management level. Second, the bill gives the two special representatives for arms control and disarmament negotiations specific assignments in, quote, discrete areas, unquote. For example, one ACDA special representative is now assigned specific responsibilities for the high priority area of conventional arms negotiations. Under the heading of conventional arms, under the definitions attached to the bill, is your weapons, ladies and gentlemen. The amendment number 1171 was agreed to. The bill H.R. 1495, as amended, was read the third time and passed. Congressional Record, Senate. March 1st. Under disarmament, Mr. Clark. Mr. President, I now desire to speak for a few minutes on the subject of disarmament, the climate toward disarmament in the Senate and in the country, and the prospects for disarmament in the coming conference at Geneva, which convenes on March 14th of this year. Mr. President, the morning newspapers carry the statement that the President is about to authorize the resumption of nuclear testing in the atmosphere. If he does this, I shall support him because I am confident that he has carefully weighed on the basis of information not available to me or to most of my colleagues the basic facts involved in that fateful decision. I am also confident he would not and will not take this tragic step unless he is convinced it is the only wise way to maintain our national security and our freedom. If atmospheric nuclear testing is to be resumed, obviously there is merit to making the decision before the disarmament conference meets. When it is the darkest, it is frequently just before the dawn. When it is the darkest, it is frequently just before the dawn. In business, in the law, and in other instances, when men came together to negotiate, frequently the break or the agreement comes at a time when things seem most hopeless, at a time when both sides are of the view that no progress is possible, but each is determined to make one more effort to achieve a mutually desired result. Mr. President, I suggest that we should look forward to the disarmament conference in the hope that something meaningful can come out of it. In considering that conference, we must give some thought to what is the position of the government of the United States. I think that position has been substantially misunderstood both in the country and in the Congress. One reason for my so thinking arises from a relatively short insertion in the record made by my good friend, the junior senator from Texas, Mr. Tower, on January 29th of this year, which appears in the record at page 1043. Look it up, folks. I ask unanimous consent, Mr. President, that my colleague's comments and a column which he introduced into the record at that point, written by a man named Ken Thompson, published in a Dallas newspaper entitled, quote, 1-2-3 Surrender, unquote, may be printed in the record at this point in my remarks. There being no objection, the excerpt was ordered to be printed in the records and as follows. The Surrender of American Rights and Sovereignty. Mr. Tower, Mr. President, will the senator yield? Mr. Mansfield, I yield. Mr. Tower, every day more and more people share a growing concern for the preoccupation of the State Department and some people in high places with the issue of disarmament. I think we all look forward to the day when men will beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. But at a time when Western civilization is confronted by an extreme militaristic threat looking toward world conquest, I think it is naive and unrealistic to be preoccupied with the question of disarmament. We know that the communist conspiracy has no intention of coexisting with us. We know that they are bent on domination of the whole world. I think we show weakness in the eyes of all of the nations at this time in talking of disarmament. In this connection, I ask to have printed in the record a very fine editorial entitled, quote, 1-2-3 Surrender, unquote, by Ken Thompson, editorial staff writer, published in the Dallas Morning News of January 23, 1962. There being no objection, the editorial was ordered to be printed in the record as follows. 1-2-3 Surrender by Ken Thompson. One of the most incredible documents ever to emerge from the foggy corridors of the State Department is a bulletin entitled, quote, Freedom from War, the United States Program for General and Complete Disarmament in a Peaceful World, unquote. Those of you who thought that William Cooper made this all up, now you know I didn't. In fact, all of these will be made available to you. We are in the process of making arrangements to publish everything. As skeptical as I have always been of the measure of good sense and loyalty within the State Department, I never would have believed that these people we call our diplomats could so completely and unabashedly advocate the surrender of American rights and sovereignty until this bulletin appeared. What it amounts to, in effect, is the official United States position on the subject of disarmament. More specifically, it is the basis of proposals which have already been submitted to the United Nations by the United States. Although this bulletin was published last fall and is available for just 15 cents from the government printing office in Washington, there has been very little attention paid to it. Now remember, folks, it was printed in 1962. Why, I cannot tell you, for it is certainly the most fantastic harebrained blueprint for surrender on record. Old Nikita himself might just as well have written it. And if more of the American people knew about this scheme, there would be a nationwide uproar that would make the reaction to the Alger Hiss scandal look like another era of good feeling by comparison. For those of you who don't know, Alger Hiss was a communist who had infiltrated our government at high levels, and it was Alger Hiss himself sent by the President of the United States who wrote the United Nations Charter. It was Alger Hiss who is mainly responsible for the formation of the UN in the form that it has taken. And it is Alger Hiss who was responsible for convincing the president and his advisors to go along with the whole scheme, ladies and gentlemen. Communist. Now, if you've been reading the liberal press, now that the socialists and communists are in charge, you know that there is a move afoot to exonerate Alger Hiss. To exonerate him. I continue. Last September, President Kennedy addressed the United Nations and spoke of the desire of the United States to reach an agreement on disarmament. His stand has been echoed by Adlai Stevenson, our chief delegate and ambassador to the United Nations. Where Kennedy and Stevenson spoke in general terms, the State Department bulletin deals in specifics. It supplies the term for those vague goals the administration hopes to gain through the United Nations. What are these terms? The State Department document summarizes the proposals as a new program which provides for the progressive reduction of war-making capabilities of nations and the simultaneous strengthening of international institutions to settle disputes and maintain the peace. This program is broken down into three phases or parts. In the first phase, all nuclear weapons tests by nations would be prohibited, production of fissionable materials stopped, strategic delivery systems reduced, and conventional arms and armed forces would be cut. In the second phase, present stocks of nuclear weapons would be reduced, further cuts would be made in armed forces, armaments and delivery systems, and military bases and facilities would be dismantled. At the same time, a peace force would be established for the United Nations. In the third and final phase, all nations would possess only those forces, non-nuclear armaments, and establishments required for the purpose of maintaining internal order. They would also support and provide agreed manpower for the United Nations Peace Force. This force would be fully functioning and would be sufficiently strong to overpower any individual nation or combination of nations resisting its will. Now I'm going to read that again for all you silly, stupid people out there who think that this is funny. This force would be fully functioning and would be sufficiently strong to overcome any individual nation or combination of nations resisting its will. There you have it, ladies and gentlemen. 1, 2, 3, bingo! The United Nations rules the world. Good night. Make sure that you do not miss the hour of the time later at 9 p.m. Pacific, 10 Mountain, 11 Central, and midnight Eastern Standard Time. God bless you all.